Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you.
Broadcasting from the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 702, Jaws.
Things look different here. Did he redecorate?
Tom's much better at doing those intros. I will give you that. You'd think that after all the Patreon episodes that I could figure that stuff out, but I can't.
Oh, you're all thrown off now.
I know. Obviously, Tom has decided to go on vacation, so I have to step in and do the little intro. Hope it's not too bad. Sorry, Tom.
Well, Tom's out to sea, so he what is. Better
That's
movie
true.
To
That's
cover?
True. It's funny. Well, we'll get into it. All right. Yeah. Don't forget, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Tom will do the double League of Show Sharers when he gets back. And don't forget, go to facebook.com/realspoilers to join the page. And then don't forget about the group, the League of Show Sharers. Obviously, you know all that good stuff. Let's go around the table real quick.
This is Kevin.
This is Joe. And we are joined by our special guest, Matt Reedy.
Hello, this is Matt Reedy.
who I think is pretty funny. Kevin and I are both on video, and Matt has informed us he is not video appropriate.
Well, I can put it on, but, you know, I'm in a dingy basement.
You know, we don't share the video. It's not like the video is going to be used.
You know, so you say. You know, it's
that's pretty.
It's okay.
I'm all Matt. Don't feel bad. I'm also in a basement. So
yeah,
but Joe's always camera ready.
Sometimes I'm wearing a shirt. Sometimes I'm not wearing pants. I don't.
Well,
it depends.
I thought you usually Donald Duck it. Isn't that how it works?
That's exactly how I do it. That's how I did it last week. My wife said, "Did you record in your underwear?" I was like, "Yeah." What are they? They're looking
we
at my
never
shoulders.
Knew.
Yeah, I'm not gonna stand up and just like walk around. So there wasn't really a lot coming out this week. One thing that I don't think we've ever covered on this show is like the original summer blockbuster, and I think it's probably one of it's one of my top five favorite movies of all time. I think it's pretty well revered all over. And we decided to do Jaws.
Yay. But who better to bring onto the show
that is
than
exactly right.
Our newfound resident Jaws expert.
Who knew?
Matt Reedy.
I wouldn't say I was an expert, but I will say I have watched this movie more times than any other movie.
Do you think you've bought it more than any other movie?
No. I think I've only bought it a couple times.
That's Terminator 2.
Okay.
Terminator 2 automatically gets the win for most releases. Now on DVD, now on Superbit DVD.
No. I just mean like how many times have you bought it?
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I've bought Back to the Future the most, you know.
No. I just presumed everybody has bought T2. I mean, T2 has the most releases, I swear, of home video. Remember,
no,
like DVD, Superbit DVD. Blu-ray special edition.
I think Army of Darkness has like the record. I mean, they were putting out. I think because different companies were getting the rights to it, they just kept putting them out over and over.
There's a lot. I know that. I mean, I have the Boomstick edition signed by Bruce Campbell. I've got the I've got a DVD, another DVD of it. I've got a, I think I have a VHS of it. And then
there was
the ones
that I had was like the one that looked like it was in a paper bag.
Yeah, that's the Boomstick edition.
Yeah.
I think I had Bruce sign that one.
Back to the Jaws DVD. One thing I thought found funny, I saw it, I think at Walmart, it was a Jaws DVD box set of movies 2 through 4. Not all of them, just 2 through 4.
That's a Joe special right there.
That's
Psycho,
right.
Yeah, 2 through 4, Jaws 2 through 4.
Okay, now wait a second. Psycho 2 through 4 are good movies. I know it sounds crazy. It shouldn't make sense, but 1 through 4 are really good movies.
But I've never seen the other Jaws. I presume those are good movies also, right?
You would be wrong.
Oh.
You've never seen any of the other ones?
No.
Isn't bad. Like, 2 is basically just a retread of 1.
Yeah.
3 is bonkers. And then
I saw that one in the theater when it was in 3D.
Oh, Jaws 3D?
Yeah.
It was
Dennis Quaid.
It's really bad. Really bad.
Have you ever seen Jaws 19 or whatever that is?
Oh, you mean like from Back to the Future 2?
Yeah.
That's Jaws 3 has Dennis Quaid and Leah Thompson.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think.
And Louis Gossett Jr.
And Louis Gossett Jr., yeah. And then Jaws 4 is Mario Van Peebles.
Yeah. Michael Caine.
Yeah, Michael Caine, that's right.
That's his summer house. That's how he bought that.
That's right.
I know we're not talking about the sequels, and I don't think we ever will, probably, on this show. Never say never, but probably
Misbegotten
not.
Sequels could work.
It could work.
Yeah.
So my question is, please tell me the plot line, just real quick. Are they children of Bruce? Like, how do they connect to these movies?
So 2 is we're back with the Brodies, and they're back on the island. Somehow the mayor from part 1 is still
the mayor
in part 2. I don't know how that guy got reelected,
right?
But
kind of undermines the whole thing, but okay.
Very much so. And I think it is almost just a retread of 1.
Well, it's more like they think Brody's crazy. They think, they don't believe him. He's just, shell-shocked and thinks everything is a shark. until it really is a shark.
Because, nobody on that island lived through the attack where a shark killed numerous people.
4 people, 5 people.
Jaws 3 is kind of Jaws 3 is a shark gets trapped at SeaWorld. And then dies.
But one of Brody's sons works at SeaWorld.
Yeah, Dennis Quaid plays the oldest Brody child grown up, and he's working at SeaWorld.
A little bit of a flash forward there.
A little bit, yeah. And then, so the shark dies at SeaWorld, and the mother of said shark comes back for revenge on the people at SeaWorld. I think that's right.
Okay.
And then Jaws 4 is Helen Brody. Jaws 4 is straight up like the shark is after the Brodies because
it's bonkers. It's like the shark is literally following them and picking them off one by one.
The youngest Brody child ends up becoming a cop on Amity and is killed by a shark.
On Christmas, by the way. It's in the winter. The shark is
they have to go somewhere warm because Amity's not warm at Christmas. So they're like in the Bahamas and the shark follows them to the Bahamas. Yes.
Okay. I think everything I've said, I want to watch all of these sequels now.
I will say there are two. There is one called, I almost think Universal scrubbed it completely from like 1981 called Great White. It's like an Italian movie. That is like they used footage from Jaws.
Oh.
And without the rights to it. If you can find it, I think it's called Great White. But yeah, the premise of Jaws 4 is that this shark is straight up after the Brodies.
Okay.
And kills Mike, and then it kills, I guess that's it. But it goes after the oldest Lance Guest, I think, plays, which is just, I mean, look. I don't want to say anybody's a downgrade from anybody, but when you have a young Dennis Quaid playing the oldest Brody, and then in the next movie it's Lance Guest, it's like, well, maybe Dennis Quaid got too famous. He's like, I'm not coming back for Jaws 4. Are you crazy? But I think the series is off the rails from 2, but It's worth your time. They're not.
They're all bad, but four is fun just from the idea that it's completely bonkers. I mean, it just makes no sense.
No, none whatsoever.
Well, so before we get into the plot of this film and start discussing it more in depth, I'm curious. I'm thinking that Joe and I had a different experience with this film than Matt did just because of our ages. And I'm kind of curious to hear Matt surrounding the release of this film and your experience with the first time you saw it, if you have any stories from then.
I think when it came out, what was it, 76?
Five, 75.
Okay, yeah. Obviously, I was too young to, you know, at that time I was like four. So I didn't see it until it came on television. And boy, I tell you what, I couldn't get enough of it, though. And I don't think I saw two in the theater either. I think I also saw that on television. Three was the first one I saw in the theater. But yeah, ever since I saw that first one, boy, anytime it was on, I'd watch it. And I still do that. Anytime it's on, I'm like, hey, Jaws is on.
Yeah.
Do you remember how long it took for a movie at that time, especially with how big this one was, before they would put that on television?
It seemed, well, okay, also back, you have to understand back at the time, this is before you guys' time, they would re-release movies in the theater. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Star Wars would come out, and then right before Empire Strikes Back came out, Star Wars would go back in the theater. Disney movies used to pop up in the theater because there was no home video.
Yeah.
So Jaws would do that. It would go, you know, come back when it was a slow time or whatever like that. I just remember it was just such a big deal. And we had the, there was a Jaws game. We used to have that over at my grandma's house. It was like this plastic shark and his jaws hinged open with a rubber band and it's full of stuff. And you gotta take with a hook, you have to take little things out one by one.
Oh my God, I want that so bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
Was there an NES game? I remember that.
Oh,
yeah. Was there a video game?
Oh, yeah. I saw it yesterday. There was a game convention in town, and I looked at the Jaws game with the instruction manual, and I thought about it, and then I thought,
how much was it?
This game probably sucks. Oh, how much were they asking? That one was, it wasn't too bad because it didn't have the case or the box for it, so it was probably like $60.
It's crazy that, like, I had all that stuff.
Oh, you know, we all had all the stuff that's worth
I had the Friday the 13th video game for the Nintendo with a purple and pink Jason. Yeah, I had it.
Get this, guys. I looked it up. So I'm guessing this is the premiere. I don't know if another channel had it before then. I'm guessing it didn't. This is an article in the New York Times from November 7th, 1979. Jaws played to 80 million on ABC.
That's crazy. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess three channels, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, three networks, but then there's UHF channels and stuff.
But reaching an average of 57% of the national television audience.
Half of the country was like, well, Jaws is on.
More than half of the people with television sets watch Jaws.
More than likely, I was one of those people at that time.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. But
they used to make events out of that, you know, Joe probably knows this, but when they would show the first Superman, they would stretch it out over two nights. They would extend it.
I have that on Blu-ray.
It had scenes that you didn't see in the theater, and they turned it into kind of like a miniseries.
Yeah.
That's incredible, though. Those numbers that we always talk about when there were only a few channels and how they would debut to these huge numbers. It is unreal that they lived in a time where you could get that much of the country to tune into the same thing.
You think about it, this is before VCR. So if you wanted to watch had to tune in right then. So that's why they get all these viewers, because they're like, well, this is my only chance.
Right. And I saw something like 1980. I'm looking at the home video release. Jaws was released on MCA video cassette in 1980 and then re-released not until 1987, where it also had a Laserdisc release. And then Universal released it on home video in 91, more Laserdiscs, DVD for the first time in 2000, because DVD was around 98 when that first came out. So in 2000. But that was the home video release schedule. So they had a good 5 years without even a VHS. And then at that time, wouldn't the VHS have been like $100 or something crazy?
Yeah, like $80. Yeah.
So people weren't running out necessarily to buy it. So I bet it had a lot of TV time throughout the years before home video really took off.
There was a Saturday morning. I've talked about this before on Channel 11. RoboCop, Jaws, like all of that stuff. Like we're just on channel, which was it's a local channel here. And they would do movies after cartoons on Saturday afternoons. You'd get three movies, and then you'd get like two good ones, and then like one not good one. Like there's like the last one at the end was like, I'm not watching that. But your first two, you might get like Dirty Harry, or you might, you know, RoboCop, or Jaws with, you know, Superman 2, not 1, but 2. So you would get that.
I thought you were going to say they made a Saturday morning cartoon of Jaws, because they were doing
that. I mean,
that
it
too.
Wouldn't surprise me.
They might as well have. They made one of RoboCop.
They made one of Rambo.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, Toxic Avenger.
Hilarious, the toys that they would want to sell for these R-rated movies, because they made good toys.
Oh, yeah, big time. I get, just to go on back off of that, what do you remember the first time you saw this? And did it have an effect on you? Because to this day, I don't like being in water where I can't see my feet.
Oh, yikes. So I never saw this movie as a kid. I saw this movie much later.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I just was never. It was one of those movies, one of those blind spots. How sometimes as kids you think, oh, everyone's seen. Like, I never watched The Goonies as a kid. So it had a different effect on me when I saw it as an adult, where I'm like, yeah, that's, I mean, no offense to anyone who's nostalgic for it, but
so everybody,
watching the Goonies is the first time for an adult. It's just like, yeah, you know, another Spielberg-esque production.
Oh, big time.
So I, you know, that didn't have the same effect on me. And I'm trying to think, what's the other big one that I never saw? It was Goonies.
Monster Squad.
One, well, definitely Monster. Definitely didn't have the nostalgia for Monster Squad.
Gremlins?
Didn't watch Gremlins I watched. Gremlins I loved, the first two Gremlins movies. So, but Jaws was not one I ever saw on VHS. Didn't watch until Blu-ray much later on. It was a big blind spot for me. My love of Steven Spielberg comes from Jurassic Park. That's my number one of his.
It's just so interesting. Matt, do you remember, like, do you know where your, like, Spielberg, it has to start at the, I mean this with all due respect, it has to start at the beginning for you, right? For with Spielberg.
Oh, you mean Duel?
Yeah,
I remember seeing that on TV all the time. They always used to show Duel.
It is just interesting to see, like, the three generational differences for Spielberg. Like,
well, I mean, they were big. All of his movies were really big when I was a kid. Like, Jaws was a big movie. I didn't see that one in the theater. But Raiders, oh my God, that was a huge movie. Saw that. E.T., you couldn't escape that. That was everywhere.
Well, yeah, just to clarify, my first Spielberg was E.T. I just mean that a lot of people say, oh, Jaws is such a masterpiece and it's my favorite and all this. But I fell in love with Jurassic Park, with it being released later. But yeah, E.T. was certainly the first Spielberg I saw and had that on VHS with the green flip cover over the tape spot, all that good stuff. But yeah, I just so Jaws escaped me for a long time, and when I finally saw it for the first time, I was like, yeah, this movie's great. I really see what people love about it and what they talk about it. Would I rate it higher than Jurassic Park? I would not. I don't
My gosh.
No, I think Jurassic Park is a masterpiece. It's so good. It's just so good. And while I really, really like Jaws, I think it's well written. There's great performances, really good cast in it. But having watched them in the reverse order, so again, I think it's hard with nostalgia because Jaws came out and had so much life before Jurassic Park, and people like Matt could watch it on TV over and over, and Joe, you saw it on home video, or however you are going to tell us that you saw it, and then you see Jurassic Park and you're like, this is great, but you don't have the built-in nostalgia. So I think it's hard to judge things in retrospect like that, but I'm just saying, having fallen in love with Jurassic Park since I was a kid, going back and watch Jaws, I don't go, oh, this is way better. I mean, it just... They're similar movies as far as like being chased by dinosaurs, chased by shark. But, oh my gosh, just the complexities of what they have to do. Not that this one isn't impressive, and we'll get into some of the underwater photography and such, but the complexities, the scale and scope of Jurassic Park and the animatronics, instead of just one shark that would hardly work, look at all the dinosaurs they had to build and the Stan Winston.
Put those dinosaurs
puppets
in salt water and let's see if they work.
Well, they put one in a ton of water and it hardly worked, but I really appreciate and respect Jurassic Park. So again, not a knock on Jaws, and we're going to get into it, but just from where I came from, I don't think seeing them in the reverse order, it didn't like bump Jurassic Park out.
I am flabbergasted. And I say that just in like, I'm like, cause I think to your point, Kevin, to me, this is a perfect movie. Like, there's nothing you can change. There's nothing. I think that you are invested in every single character. Like, Quint is one of the greatest characters ever.
Robert Shaw is so good in this role.
He is amazing.
It
and
is
I think
phenomenal.
Brody is, the quintessential, like, dad.
No, he's Brody. Quint's the other guy.
No, I know that. But, like, every, you know, and there are pieces of this book that I'm glad that they took out. Like, there's a whole piece of this book where Hooper is having an affair with Helen Brody.
Oh, why?
And, like, it's in the book. Like, maybe that's just how Block wrote the book, and I'm glad that they took that out.
There's another part with the mayor owes money to loan sharks or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Is it really?
Yeah, something like that. Something weird like that. And then the only other big change I can remember, I read that book when I was a kid, but the only other big change I can remember is Hooper gets killed.
Yes, Hooper
dies. Brody's the only survivor at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting how for the movie.
When he's in the shark cage, he gets bitten in half.
That's interesting. So for the movie, they tried to put a little bit of a bow on it there. And Hooper is such a good character. Dreyfuss
so great.
Is hilarious in the role. He adds such a fun element to things that are going on in these serious situations.
He's got such a snark, but like the snark is like, I'm smarter than you and you're a moron, but you still are kind of like, but when he's talking to like the mayor and the mayor's like, we're going to do it. Like that whole scene where
at the sign,
they're standing outside at the sign
in front of the billboard
where he's just like, I don't know why we're having this discussion. And he's just laughing at the mayor. He's like, this is on you, man. Yeah. Like, I'm out of here.
But he is right. Like the mayor is dumb. So I don't take it in a way where some characters think they're smarter or whatever. It's like, no, he is. The mayor is not smart and selfish and obviously doing all this for the wrong reasons. And I agree. I love the way that Dreyfuss plays it. It is a really fun role. So I'm glad they had him live. Unfortunately, they had him live to not show up in any sequels, right? He's not in those sequels.
Oh,
so.
No.
I think this is peak. Well, this is right before like peak Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is kind of like his career kind of takes off from here. And
he had Close Encounters right after this. It was like a 1-2.
Yeah. And they weren't going to get him back. They barely got Roy Scheider back for 2. Yeah. Roy Scheider did a movie called Blue Steel, I think, so that he couldn't do 3. Like, he scheduled it strategically, so they're like, we're doing Jaws 3. He's like, nope, sorry, I'm over here doing this helicopter movie, can't do it.
Oh, you mean
it.
Blue Thunder?
Blue Thunder, yeah.
I was
going to
say,
you.
Is
yeah.
that the Derek Zoolander biopic?
I think there is one.
No, it's pretty bad. It's like a super helicopter thing.
The helicopter is the shark.
Yeah.
And it was like, just get Roy Scheider. And he was like, okay, as long as I don't do that Jaws 3.
I do think that the casting...
Oh, it's so good.
The casting is so good in this movie. It really is. Those three, the Hooper, Brody, and Quint, are phenomenal, and their moments together they share. But I also wanted to say, watching the film and then thinking about Jurassic Park, it's like, well, yeah, they got Spielberg to do Jurassic Park.
Sure.
With all the dinosaurs hunting the people. It's such a... He, in hindsight, it's the perfect choice, knowing what he did with this movie and how he could... magnify that and put it onto a bigger scale. So
Spielberg definitely has a look to his movie, and maybe not as much anymore, you know, like, but he, for a long time, you could look at a movie and just the way he moves the camera and the way like scenes look, like, oh, this is a Spielberg movie.
And you know what it is too, though? You know what I think you have to give credit to? John Williams.
For sure.
Oh,
When you put Spielberg's camera work, like in this movie, for instance, where I never have really appreciated the Jaws score, because when I watched it before,
it's
I wasn't really thinking
too.
About that. But there's more to it than that theme. All we think about is the theme. But when they're out to sea, the score by John Williams is really evocative about the horrors of being out on the water and not knowing where the shark is and all those little things and the happier moments and the quiet moments. So I was listening more for the score on this rewatch, and I had only seen it a couple times before, but I was paying attention to those little things. Part of it was the camera work, but then I was watching it while that score was playing, and I go, that's what feels like Spielberg, is the John Williams score with the way he moves the camera. And then sometimes the light, the way that light will, the camera will pass by and light will be shining a certain way or go behind an object and the light is covered and then revealed, the way he moves the camera like that. I think that's all is that perfect Spielberg-esque imagery.
You know what's kind of amazing about the score is I can't think of any other that you know exactly what it is with 2 notes.
That's true.
No, that's...
I mean, all it needs is that dun-dun, and then you know exactly what it is. You can have nothing else, you know exactly what it is.
If you cut out, I mean, maybe the beginning of the Halloween score is close. If it started off doo-doo, you might be able to. But you're right, though, because it doesn't have to play the rest, or it doesn't, you know, it has that those two notes right there. You're right. It is incredible how iconic that became, especially for someone who didn't grow up with it, right? Like, I didn't grow up with the movie, but I knew that theme. Everyone,
sure.
It transcends, you know, the zeitgeist. It just becomes common knowledge for anyone, whether you're a film buff or a Jaws fan or whatnot. So you're right. It is incredible. And just thinking back on John Williams' career, man.
Well, I was just going to ask that. Like, is there another composer that has had as many bangers, if you will, to their name, right? So you've got
Morricone.
That's fair, but like, can you, if you were to hear,
I don't think on the level of John Williams,
right?
Anyone
so you've got, you're going to have Jaws, Harry Potter, Superman, Indiana Jones,
Star Wars.
I mean, that's
those
just the five.
Right there are the biggest properties in the world ever.
I mean, I was thinking maybe Danny Elfman, maybe Alan Silvestri.
Elfman,
Hans Zimmer,
Hans Zimmer
up there. I mean, especially with his work.
As far as
with
we're just going recognizable.
Of course, with yeah. Lion King, True Romance, kind of transcending the Nolan stuff.
Right.
But he's done a lot of work outside of that, so I could see that. Did he do Blade Runner 2049?
No. Oh, you mean the sequel?
Might have done that one as well. But the other one is who's the other big one that we're forgetting?
Giacchino,
Michael Giacchino.
Oh, sure. Coming out, yeah.
He is.
But like, I'm just thinking, like, you hear that Harry Potter theme, you hear Superman, you hear Star Wars,
hands down, immediately. Iconic themes. Elfman, I think, is on his. I think yeah. Elfman's number two on his tails because of Batman, because of Spider-Man, Beetlejuice. Those are also iconic themes. But you're right. Like,
Snyder's The Justice League.
There are composers that have done great, phenomenal work, like the others. Like, I mean, Sylvester with Back to the Future, but he doesn't have.
Can
as
I tell you
many.
That I thought that was John Williams up until like 10 years ago?
Sure. Right. Yeah.
I had no idea. Somebody was like, that's not John Williams. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Because
of
you just
John
naturally
Williams.
Assume it's a Spielberg it's movie.
Spielberg,
it must be John Williams.
Exactly.
Spielberg production. And it right. has that. It does have that little. How do you even describe that? Not
There's
being
just,
a music guy, that little twinkle
yes,
part of the song.
Exactly
you know what
it.
I'm saying? That high note or whatever that reminds you of a Spielberg type.
I remember having a conversation with Brian about.
Oh, is that which Brian?
The one you think it is.
okay.
about the Avengers theme and how yeah. when in Avengers 1, that theme wasn't that impressive. It was fine.
It was
good, right? But by the time you get to Endgame and they hit you with portals, which is the name of like when everybody starts showing back up mm-hmm. and they're going to and like that theme is incredible.
Yeah, and that's like, Silvestri.
It is Silvestri. Yeah, that's but yeah, the fact that it was like from part 1 you're like, "All right, it's doable."
Well, because
then they get to
it's the nostalgia, it's the Rocky theme, it's they've planted
yeah,
it
right
they've used it so much where when you first heard it was fine, it was serviceable, it was a good theme,
right?
But now they've planted it in these different movies, and then by the time you get to Endgame it has payoff, just like in Creed when you hear the Rocky theme, they don't hit you with it right
for about
away
2 seconds,
but there's payoff to it.
Yeah, right. So we'll just get into it. This one opens up on a party on the beach, and we've got two drunk teenagers or 20-year-olds, and they decide to go skinny dipping, and poor buddy can't keep up because the girl he's going to go skinny dipping with apparently is not as drunk as he is.
Lucky
and
guy, though.
Yeah, that's out, very true, I guess. Yeah, right.
He didn't get lucky, but he lucked out.
In the great scheme of things, he came out okay. So our character jumps into the water, and this is one of those scenes that I think is totally iconic and terrifying. The way we see, you know, we see the shot from under the water. Do we get the theme here? Do we get beats of it? Either
I don't
way,
think so.
It opens with the theme in the credits. I don't know if we use it here.
Okay, so she's pulled under the water, right? Like her head blops under the water. She pops up and. I don't know if this was on purpose, like if they didn't tell her that they were going to pull her, or if she does this on purpose.
Legitimately scared.
The way she's breathing, like trying to like gulp for breath, and then like, it's terrifying. The look on her face is terrifying. She is scared out of her mind.
Good actor.
Well, she's not. That's the whole thing, right? She's not an actor. She was like, man.
Oh, shark victim. Wow.
She was a shark victim.
She was an actor. Yeah, this was a documentary.
Yeah, now this really method acting to the next yeah, level.
Right.
Jared Leto wishes he had that kind of dedication.
Yes, that's exactly. She was not, I think she was an actor, but she was like into, I don't remember. There's the documentary, His Name is Bruce, I think is the name of the documentary. It goes way into detail. She, yeah, there's something else in her gotcha. Backstory about being in the water.
But she does a good job,
she's
certainly.
Terrifying.
You're right.
And it's absolutely terrifying.
The kind of bait and switch of, oh, she's under, and then wait, she's back up, but then...
And then, but like, she's gulping for air, and she's freaking yeah. out, and then, of course, she goes back under, and she does not come back up. We are introduced to the Brodies, Helen and Mr. Brody. Adrian Brody is in this movie. I don't know if you guys yeah. knew that or not.
Sheriff Brody.
Sheriff Brody. And there's something about the way that they are filmed together that they both have fantastic chemistry. Like, they, you feel like this is a married couple
yeah.
moving to this island for the first time. There's actually, I think, with Gourley and Rust, with Paul Rust and Matt Gourley, they cover this. And they want to know the backstory as to, like, why Brody came to Amity. Like, does he right. have some crazy backstory where he... He shot and killed a kid, and he had to get out of New York, so he moved to Amity to get away from, you know, police life.
And this is Police Chief Martin Brody, just
Martin
so we're
Brody,
clear.
Correct, yes. So he gets a phone. I love the fact that there are two phones in this house. One phone is the police phone. The other phone on top is, like, the house phone.
They actually had a sheriff line installed.
Which I think is fantastic. Like, that's so 70s.
It's smart.
It's very smart. Where he picks up the other phone, there's nobody there, and so we go out to the dunes, I guess, and we find the body of this girl. And
I like that guy just playing in the sand, like distraught. I thought he did a pretty good job in the
that's
foreground.
That's the guy from the beginning.
Deputy.
Yeah, the deputy that,
or the guy that found her.
It wasn't that the deputy.
It's the deputy
he's blowing
that
the
found
whistle.
Her.
Yeah, he was blowing the whistle, and then he kind of falls to his knees.
Oh, sure, yeah. sure. That's
I
right.
I like
that's
the
right.
way that Spielberg shoots him in the foreground, where Brody is in the background, and the how he is kind of shell-shocked, I guess that you would say, by
I think
what
that's
he's
a good
seen.
Way to put it, yeah.
And Brody is in the background just like, oh, my God, and runs to the body.
And then, yeah, so they take it to the coroner.
Oh, and Brody's with the guy that passed out.
The guy. Yeah, like, he's kind of busting right. his balls, too.
Are you
he
glad?
Said something
I, at
like,
least I called you.
At least I called you. And Brody's like, yeah. Thanks, man. Go. Cool. So they take him. They take the body to the coroner, and we don't really see anything with the body yet.
You see the.
No, you see a hand with
hand
like crabs.
Do you
on
see
it?
The hand, or do you see the hand at the coroner's office?
No, at the
you,
on
you
the
see
beach.
It on the beach.
That's
but it's
right. That's
in
right
crabs.
With the crabs.
The dead hand and the net and the pale skin. It's a really creepy imagery.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The coroner ends up saying it's a shark attack. And that's Brody's like, okay. Like, you know, he goes to the sheriff or he goes to the mayor, who is just great.
Yeah.
You love to hate him, right?
Well,
like,
yeah,
he's the best. He's the best possible actor to play
yeah,
the mayor
Murray,
of this town.
Murray Hamilton is great.
He's
the performance
so wonderful.
Is great as this smarmy politician who obviously cares about nothing else than making the businesses happy and eventually getting reelected.
Right.
All he cares
somehow
about,
he does in part two. Don't know how that happens, but that's a thing. The
another thing
so
great
small.
About him is that blazer with the anchors on it.
Oh,
perfect.
It's so great.
I always think of that Bruce Campbell played this character in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
It's a
he was
total,
the mayor.
Yep. Yeah, he's the mayor that wants to keep the town open for tourism or whatnot when things are raining from the sky, and he wants to use it as a way to draw people in, which is a little bit different, but he wants to use this town as getting all these food items rained in on him, and even though it could be dangerous and they're trying to figure out what's going on, he's bringing people in. And yeah, I love that it's that parody. And of course, Bruce Campbell,
that's really funny.
Yeah,
Bruce Campbell, if they ever god help us if they ever remake this, Bruce
well,
Campbell would be a great mayor.
It was perfect casting. He did a great job with the voicing for Cloudy. So yeah, I would love that because when I watch this role,
don't
what's that?
Don't touch this movie. Don't like.
Well,
I think there are certain movies that you know. As I'm looking at my DVD wall, like please don't ever.
There's really no need for it.
Yeah, we're talking worst case scenario.
Hypothetically,
if they remade it, he would be great. But yeah, they don't need to. No,
but there, Brody. Is a big city cop, right? We are led
to
believe
New York.
He's from New York. He's so he doesn't have. I'm not going to say he doesn't have he doesn't have a small town mind. Does that make sense? Like he doesn't
get what they do in these small towns where everyone knows each other and is depending on the stuff for their, they have summer season, which is where the businesses are going to make all their money.
Yes.
And he doesn't understand putting anything else above, as you should, the police work. He shouldn't put things above that, but the mayor is all thinking about, oh, well, I know that I'm just going to throw out, whatever, fill it. This restaurant and this person at the hotel, and he's thinking about all these little town connections.
And in the mayor's defense, right? Like, he is thinking about the town. If we close these beaches and we tell everybody there was a shark attack, our summer season is effed. We're not going to get, everybody's going to be out of money. So in the first one, you're kind of like, maybe, maybe.
He's thinking about the town, as in he's not totally doing it for selfish reasons, except for
when we get to the second
reelected and such. I mean, it's still selfish, but yes, he is trying to make sure that the whole town doesn't shut down and businesses aren't out of money and all that, but he's doing it at the expense of human life and clearly ignoring the signs, because he gets the coroner to say it wasn't a shark attack, it was a propeller. I hate that scene.
I love that scene because the coroner is such a scumbag.
Right.
He's like, I didn't say that. And you're just like, what?
It's so infuriating because the mayor got to him, got him to change his mind, where Brody is like, you told me it was, and he's like, I'm mistaken. No, you weren't mistaken. It's so smarmy and so gross that they would do that and just to keep the beaches open. And so the mayor does that multiple times. After the first time, okay, he wants to write it off. Let's not panic. It's a one-off thing. Okay, maybe. But after the Kittner boy dies, that's inexcusable. And I feel so bad for the mom or for Brody, really, because Brody wanted to shut it down. It's not his fault. But when Mrs. Kittner comes up to him and smacks him and says all that, it's like, mayor.
Scene.
It's not him. They're pointing the finger at the new guy and the cop who didn't shut it down, but he had no choice.
It is a great representation of politics.
Yeah. Right?
Like the mayor says, do it. It backfires. They're like, well, the sheriff didn't do what he was supposed to do. And so it's a great look at, maybe not small politics in general, or even just work, right? Like, how many times have you,
your boss
has said, told you to do something and you're just like, that's not a good idea. And then it's not a good idea. And then they come back to you.
But if it goes well, who gets the credit?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Scheider, his performance throughout the entire film is great, but especially in this scene, you can see how hurt he is in his face. And then the following scene when he's talking to his wife, you can see how distraught he is over this, because he was upset with the first death of the woman who died.
Right.
And so to have that kind of guilt that comes later on when all the people go into the water the next day. And like we said, the Kittner boy is out there in the water. And
is this real quick before does the scene with him going over, with Brody going through the shark book, and then her Helen coming in and talking to him, is that after the Kittner boys attacked, or is that before?
I think that's before,
I think that's after.
Is it?
I'm trying to remember.
The only reason I ask is because
is after, because she said something about, he's mad about the son being in the boat, and she says he'll probably never get in the water again after today.
This whole little scene right here, I think, I just watched Poltergeist again for in a little bit, and there's a scene in that where Craig T. Nelson and the woman who plays his wife, Jo Beth Williams, are sitting in their bed, and they're both smoking weed, and they're people, right? They're just two people who are married, who love each other, and they're just having this conversation. That seems very natural. And of course, Spielberg may or may not have directed most of Poltergeist, but we don't,
The scenes between the two of them are really, really good. And I especially like that one when she's in his lap and he's distraught and she says,
you want to get drunk and fool around? He's like,
it feels so natural between the two of them. That's the scene where it really clicked for me. Like, this is a real married couple. It feels like it.
But I also like that there's the scene where, the kid's in the boat and he's like, get out of the boat, get out of the boat. And she's like, just let him be. And then she looks at the picture of the shark attacking the boat and she's like, you get out of that boat right now. Like, it's just, there's comedic beats that I think are very, that aren't forced. They're natural comedic beats that I think are wonderful.
And I like how she backs up Brody. She's like, listen to your father. Right.
Yeah. So, we go to the beach. People are swimming and, you know, Brody doesn't really want his kids to get in the water. And then the Kittner boy, you know, I think this is a good interaction where he's like, can I just go out for a little bit longer? And she's like, put some sunscreen on your face and go. And the kid runs out with the bright yellow flotation device, gets out in the water. Also, I'm just kind of curious as to, like, how far out are these kids going?
Right. Because you get the underwater scenes where it shows them they're all treading water.
And yeah.
How deep is that water? From the shark's point of view, look at the size of the shark.
That's what I was thinking.
And if he's that low underneath of him, it must be like a sheer drop-off. You walk 3 feet off the beach and it just goes down into a trench.
Right, that's exactly it.
Also, they're out there treading water for a long time. That's pretty tiring.
Oh, yeah. And look at how whenever someone gets attacked and they blow the whistle and get everyone back, it takes them a minute to swim back.
Well, what's great about that scene on the beach is he's focused at looking at the water, and he's got all these people yakking in his
bugging
ear
him,
the whole time.
Bugging him. This is where you get the...
It's so stressful.
is this JJ's production company?
Oh, what? Bad Hat Harry?
Bad Hat Harry.
Oh, that's where it comes from, yeah.
Yeah. It's JJ, though, right? That's whose it is?
Well, he's Bad Robot.
No, I think it's Bryan Singer.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Bad Robot is...
That's right, that's
JJ's.
Right.
That's You're right. It is Bryan Singer. That's why we don't hear that anymore.
Yeah. So that, which I think is great. You know, the guy's wearing the goofy hat. And to your point, this is a great scene where Brody's trying to look out into the water and people keep bugging him. And then out of the corner, I'm trying to think.
Was this the zoom in background?
Oh, that's
thing?
Great, isn't it?
It's so great.
It's a cool shot.
But do you see it from Brody's point of view or do you see it happening? I'm trying to think.
You see it back and forth. You talk about you see point of view of the shark coming up to the flotation device with the kid
right.
You see him screaming, and I think that's when it does the zoom.
And then you see it like you see everything happening in the water.
Right, and you other kids are screaming, and then you see kind of like a fountain of blood and
Whoa.
Oh my gosh, the blood that they use in this movie, especially the fountain of blood on the Kittner boy, is so crazy. And I can see how that would be absolutely terrifying, especially at this time when you're not seeing a ton of stuff like that.
And a PG movie, this is a PG movie, which is bonkers.
Oh, Spielberg.
Hey, what's he going to do? There was no...
PG-13.
And it didn't raise to the level of rated R. Well, it would have. There's a scene in a second that they had to cut because it was going to get a rated R rating.
That's what I mean, though. Spielberg, the man responsible for the PG-13, for the PG-13 with all his antics.
Yeah, right. So, obviously, in a heartbreaking scene, all of the kids are... Back at the beach, we see Mrs. Kittner kind of looking for her son, and then we see just like bloody water and pieces of the yellow floaty come floating back in, and we know that poor Kittner boy is not to be found.
So they're putting up a reward for this shark, and then
I think she does, right? Like Miss Kittner puts
up. She does, yeah, she does.
And we get that introduction to Quint, and this is such a great introduction.
So good,
Robert Shaw in this role. He plays the perfect old sailor, old fisherman, wise old loony. His sayings are just so crazy, and his performance, he seems so off, but also so expert in what he does that no one else can do as good as he can. It's a really great performance.
Yeah, he is probably, he's amazing. Apparently he was drunk a lot.
Oh, those shots they were taking weren't... water.
Nope. But there's, I don't know if it was this scene or the scene on the boat where he gives the speech. And apparently on one day he was so drunk that they just, you know, it was bad. He came in the next day to Spielberg and was like, let me do that again. And then, and I can't remember if it was this scene or the one on the boat where he's talking about the USS in Indianapolis.
Okay.
But it was one of those two scenes. And then you get the performance that you get in this movie.
But he basically, it's like, yeah, I'll find him for 3,000. I'll kill him for 10,000. Right.
Right.
And
right.
No one bites on that, pun intended. But they all these fishermen are attracted to try to take down this shark. But clearly, they're all doing it haphazardly. They're all trying to pass it's ridiculous.
It's crazy that we get both introductions this quickly, right? Like, so you get Quint at the town meeting, and then you get Hooper.
It's coming
while
in after.
All these morons are trying to jump in the boat, and you get a pretty good idea of Hooper's character, where he's like, "Hey, man, you can't put that many people in that boat." And they're like, "Nah, get out of here, city boy."
That's why the screenplay is so well regarded and studied by film students, because it is a perfect screenplay. It's so tight. It does not have downtime. It introduces the characters so well, right? Like, one after another, you get an introduction to who these characters are. There's no fat on this script.
No.
It just keeps going.
And it's a 2-hour movie, and it does not feel like a 2-hour movie.
No, it really does move at a great pace.
There's no
pace.
Lull in it.
Yeah. No.
By the way, this scene with everybody, you know, showing up to hunt the shark, there's a little bit that cracks me up every time is the harbor master comes out, sees everybody, but he's just pouring himself a bowl of Rice Krispies. He's doing nothing. That's his job, he's the harbor master. He should be controlling all this, and he's just sitting there smoking a corncob pipe and eating breakfast.
There's that guy, and then there's the deputy, where Brody's like, get out there and do something. These are your people.
You know,
he's like, no, they're not. They're from Rhode Island or Massachusetts. Like, these aren't my people.
Yeah, it's great. And there's nobody doing what they should do except for Brody. And Brody is the new guy in town. So
right.
He has so little power, even though he's the sheriff, but the respect is what he lacks from people. And so they're kind of just walking all over him and doing their thing. And then we get the scene where the guys on the dock are trying to get Bruce, and he swims away with the dock. And then
Godzilla 98 is what I thought about when I saw that.
But the iconography, the way that the terror that is struck into you when you see the dock coming back, that is such a great visual for not seeing the shark, but knowing the dock is attached to him, and it goes out and it comes back in as the guy's trying to swim to safety. I thought that was one of the most stressful moments.
They use
moments.
That later with the barrels.
You know, sure, I mean,
you don't have to see the shark. You know where it's there because you see the barrels moving.
But that's the ingenuity of, to me, that's one of the things I love about like 70s and 80s filmmaking is you have these ideas, right? Like, the idea was, we're going to show this shark as much as we can. We're going to build this massive mechanical shark. It works in a pool. And as soon as we put it in salt water, that shark says, nope, I'm not working. So they have to MacGyver it. They have to figure out a way to get this shark to work. And I think if you see this shark as much as they wanted to, this movie isn't as effective.
Right. No, you lose all the
It's not as good.
They lucked into it. And it really is amazing, because if you would have seen the shark right away, it wouldn't have mattered. It would have been just another monster movie. But they build up the tension and the horror of what you don't see. And you imagine, how big is this thing? It's doing all this crazy stuff. We never see it. And this scene is tense because you just see a dock and you see a guy swimming for his life, and it's getting closer and closer. All of that is terrifying and effective. So it's amazing how he lucked out with the shark not working, because when you do see it, it's like, crap, there it is.
Yeah, right. So, of course, all of these townsfolk, they think they've caught the shark. They string it up. It's one of my I use this to this day when they're asking what kind of shark it is, and Hooper's like, "Oh, it's a tiger shark." And the guy turns around and goes, "A what?" Like,
I love that.
It's such a great, like, 2-second bit that is just fantastic. And they want to cut it open. Basically, Hooper and Brody want to cut the shark open. And I think the mayor has a good point. He's like, I'm not going to cut that shark open if this is the shark, and have that Kittner boy come tumbling out on the dock. And I was like, that's fair. That's a fair. As a human being, I'm like, that's a fair thing
to
not want to happen.
Really thinks, if he actually believes that, he wants that to be and wants people to think it is. But does he really think that's
maybe
it?
But
I think it's a legitimate
reason.
Yeah, I think he really wanted that to be the shark, and in his mind, that was a pretty big shark, so it made sense, I guess.
Okay.
We find out that it's not the shark.
No.
Brody has
Hooper
over for dinner, and they're like, they go cut the shark open.
Hooper's a marine biologist from Ocean Institute.
Oceanographic Institute.
Okay, so he's the expert that Brody has called in to study these things. So he's a great character because he gets the science part of it right. He knows the animals. He knows the ocean. He does have some sailing experience, so he can at least help out with the boat later. And he's a really good character to Brody is obviously great and he wants to go kill this shark, but he doesn't have the skills. And we didn't mention he's afraid of water.
You're terrified of water.
So he's not exactly the perfect person to go, even though he wants to kill the shark. So you get a really good team up here of a scientist who understands the water, the sheriff who wants to protect people and kill the shark, and then eventually we'll get to Quint, who is an expert hunter.
And he's a wackadoo.
Well, that part, yes.
So they realize that the shark is not the right one. They find hunks of fish. They find license plates.
That scene, you're like, ugh, even though you can't smell it, the way that Dreyfus
smells awful.
Performs it as he's trying to cut open. It reminded me of cutting open the Tauntaun in Empire.
Very similar.
The way
similar.
I'm thinking like, oh, is there some kind of homage here either way? But
Maybe. I mean, that would make sense, right?
But he cuts it open and you just see his reaction. And when the when the water and the foamy water spills out and he goes, ugh, like, I don't know, I smelt it somehow. And it was really a great performance to put you there. Like, this is gross.
Right. So they go to, they think that the Jaws is a night hunter. So they go out where they think he's going to be. They end up finding an abandoned boat, and Hooper decides in his infinite wisdom to go into the water at night. I was like,
that's Ben Gardner's boat.
It's Ben Gardner's boat, who is a character I think we see early in the movie. I think we see him somewhere.
I'm sure
early,
we do.
Earlier.
Yeah. Well, in that scene at the harbor when everybody's like, he's amongst that.
Yeah.
And this scene is horrific.
Terrifying.
It is.
It's out of a horror movie.
It is. This is so gross and so scary. When you see the dead body, Hooper just goes down to investigate. He wants to basically find
it's
evidence.
It's not a body. Oh.
Well, yeah. His head's sticking out of the hole.
I always think of this as just the head.
Oh, his body's in there. I don't think it's just the head. That's true. It's a great scare. He's going down to examine the bite marks, and he ends up finding a tooth, which he loses when he gets scared. But he's just going
He needs to start taping things to his hands, because every time he gets scared, he drops something. Good Lord.
Yeah. But that's the thing, right? He's a scientist. He's not a hunter. He's a researcher. He doesn't deal in these. He's looking at the aftermath of things. He's not dealing with in the action. So it's great because he's a great character. He's a good person. He's knowledgeable, but man, when it comes to doing this stuff, and you know, he eventually gets some strength later on, but it's still, he's not perfect at it. Right. So like, that's why the three of them together make such a great team, because they work as a unit with all their specialties.
Yeah, exactly.
But seeing that head though, that gross head with like seaweed coming out of the eye socket. Ugh.
It's a worm.
Is it a worm? Okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if it was like one of those little plants or whatever, but okay. It was gross. Whatever
it was
waving in the water is the dead body. Yeah.
So Brody and Hooper go back to the mayor. They're like, look, this is not the shark. We've got this thing out there. We have to close the beaches.
Oh, but do you have the tooth? Because they're like, right.
Okay, this is something that cracks me up about that scene. He doesn't have the tooth, but they have Ben Gardner's boat with his corpse in it. Isn't that better proof than a tooth?
Well, I think it is, but the mayor is basically like trying to find any reason he can to...
Right. This is that scene that I was talking about where they're at the front of the Amityville, mm-hmm. or not Amityville, Amity sign. With the shark, you know, the fin on it and all that good stuff.
Yeah, he's looking for any excuse to ignore them, even though they're both like, no, we've seen it. We've seen the damage. We've seen the tooth. We clearly know two people have died.
That shark is still out there.
Is it three at this point? Has the guy that was next to the kids in the pond died at this point?
No, that's next.
That's next. Okay. So,
yeah. Well, technically three. You've got the girl, then you've got the Kittner boy, and then Ben Gardner.
Ben Gardner.
So then especially, I mean, so yeah, he knows that.
And also, if you want to count the dog, Pippet.
Oh, Pippet. Yeah, poor Pippet.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. So we go to the beach.
But the mayor's more concerned about the graffiti on the sign. That's the point.
Yes, where he's like, you find them, you string them up by their boots.
Dude,
and I was
by their Buster Browns.
By their Buster Browns, yeah.
Oh, he has a great line, too, where he says to Dreyfus, he goes, you'd like to prove that, wouldn't you? Get your name in the National Geographic.
Yeah.
That's true. I forgot he said that. That's right. So we go to the beach. I think this is fantastic, where nobody's going in the water. And this is the weird part, right? So the sheriff is worried, not the sheriff, the mayor is worried about closing the beaches, and Brody acquiesces, and they don't close the beaches. The beaches are open. People just aren't getting in the water. And it's like, why does it matter if people get in the water? So he walks up to like one of the, you know, old patrons of the town. He's like, why aren't you getting in the water? And the guy's like, no, I just put sunscreen on. Yeah. He's like, why don't you go ahead and go out there? And it's like, why does it matter if they're in the water? Who cares? The beaches are open.
I guess they just want to see people having fun. Maybe they'll leave early if they're...
I also found it funny that how many people came in on that ferry to not go in the water.
That's a lot.
My gosh. Yeah. There was, I like that little montage of the people coming in. I'm like, holy crap. Is a little town like that really going to get that much tourism? It just seemed people.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a spot.
Yeah, summer area in that part of the country. Yeah. I guess it just, I was like, wow, that is a ton for a little town.
By the way, the couple that he goes to and says, take your kids out in the water type thing. Here's something I find really odd about the movie. Look at the differences. Most of the adults are really old. And they
the ages.
Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is across the board. Mrs. Kittner looks old. Brody's maybe that they're on the bubble, but there's a lot of them.
Martin Brody looks old. I think Helen Brody looks like, you know, she could be the mother of two boys.
They're probably the most normal.
I think Brody may have.
Yeah, but, you know, it was funny. I was talking to Tom about this because I watched a video about people were basically saying, why do people look so old in the olden days? Like, some of these people aren't as old as you even think they are. And it has to do with the way they dress. And now, so far removed from it, we know that's how old people dress. But younger people, that was just the way they dressed. And they never changed throughout the years. It's a really interesting thing. And it also has to do with medicine and the stuff people eat. There's a lot of that as well. But I get what you're saying. They do look old, but I bet you some of them aren't as old. That's what a younger or middle-aged person
looked
like.
That's probably true, yeah.
Back then. And it's a really weird mind trick. There's a whole YouTube video on it. I need to find it because I was going to send it to Tom too. But there's someone that did it, basically an analysis on that, and showed how people would dress. Like when they were in their 20s, they would dress like we would think an old person would dress, but they were only 20. And they never stopped dressing like a quote-unquote old person would dress. And, you know, they never change their style of clothes with the times. And so when you look back, they automatically, there's something subconsciously like, oh, they're old, but not back then they weren't. Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, everybody, you're right, Matt. There is not a single young person to be seen, with the exception of, like, Brody's cop buddy.
Yeah, right? He's like probably the youngest guy on the island.
He has to be.
Maybe the grandparents are watching their kids for the summer.
Right. So once people on the beach see people go out into the water, everybody floods the water. And we've got helicopters over. We've got lifeguards. We've got boats. Here's the other thing. Why don't they just put up, like, don't go past this line? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of hard to do with a huge beach, and I don't know.
But they had it. Like, the scene when we see, everybody gets... Basically, there's two kids who, if I were these kids' parents, I would have been livid.
Oh, man.
At this point, when they are floating around with the shark, and they freak everybody out, and old people are getting trampled, and people holding babies are getting run over while people are trying to get out of the water.
And they're lucky they didn't get shot. They've got 20 guns drawn on them.
Here's another thing. They're about the same, close to age as the Kittner boy. That's probably somebody they went to school with.
I know.
Now they're making a joke out of the whole thing.
Oh, those, you could tell that there was, like, the cool group of kids, and the Kittner boy was on the outskirts of that.
It definitely was not. So. We should say that the Brody boys want to get in the water. I guess the youngest one doesn't, which I think is that's a really good head fake where you think the youngest is in the boat as well, but we just see him later, like, playing in the sand. Brody kind of pulled, I think Michael is the oldest, mm-hmm. says, hey, can you, like, you're going to take the boat, that's fine. Can you go to the pond? He's like, man, the pond is for old people. And he was like, can you just do your old man a favor? I love that line. That's a great line. And they go into the pond, and of course, Brody unknowingly has just kind of put his son in the path of the shark. We see
another fin.
Yeah, after everything has kind of calmed down, there's a girl painting on the side, and she sees this fin going into the pond, and of course, Michael is in the pond. This is the scene that they had to cut because they would have got an R rating.
Oh.
When the shark hits the guy in the boat, there's a hole, I think it's either on the Blu-ray or maybe in that documentary, where they were going to show the guy like halfway up out of the water and just blood splurting out of his mouth as Jaws was like pulling him underwater. And they had to cut the whole scene. Like they had to, you get what you get in the movie. They had to recut it. But there was like
I think what you get is really effective.
And with I'm going to tell you. Dropping off? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, even right before then, one of the best shots for me is it's kind of an aerial. You're looking down on him. He's on the, the water edge of the boat and you could barely see the shark coming at the mouth open.
Yes.
That is really scary looking.
Yeah. It's the jaws is almost like rotated onto his side.
Yeah.
And he takes a chomp out of the this guy in the boat, and you see the guy's leg kind of just float to the bottom of the boat. And I do like that when they pull. It's interesting because Jaws gets his little snack, and then he takes off. He's like, "I'm good."
Yeah,
and
I mean the shock on Michael's face because the shark's coming right for him, but he's already eaten, so he goes past him. He's been fed, but he was so close to being killed. I would be in shock too if that thing swam past me.
But I do like that when they're pulling Michael out of the water, they make sure to show you that Michael has both of his legs.
No, it's a that is the great. You're right.
Yeah.
That camera angle that they start with his arms and pan down to his legs is such.
I was like, oh, that's slick.
Purposeful, great shot because you're thinking, oh my god, did he get bit?
Don't worry, the kid is okay. So we go to the hospital and Michael's okay. He's just in shock.
He gets to watch TV, so that's good.
Yeah.
No, and also, his mom's going to bring him his toy cards and coffee ice cream.
Yeah. Oh, it's coffee flavor. I thought he wanted coffee.
No, that's what I thought he wanted, too. He wanted coffee flavored ice cream.
You want ice cream? Okay. Coffee. Okay. Okay, I get it. Okay.
That makes more sense. I thought he did say, he's like, coffee, got it.
Yeah, that was so weird. Okay, thank you. I used to love that. That was my favorite flavor as a kid, coffee ice cream.
Are you serious?
Before I drank coffee, I loved that flavor. Yeah.
Here's what's funny. I don't like coffee, but I do like coffee flavored ice cream.
Isn't that interesting?
I don't think I've ever had coffee flavored ice cream.
They don't sell it as much anymore. I don't hardly ever see it on a menu anywhere, but as a kid, I would always ask for coffee ice cream.
Weird.
I know.
So go to the hospital.
Man, this is where the mayor finally
acquiesces. And is like, if I were Brody, I'd have knocked him out.
Oh yeah, he almost got his own family killed.
Brody has so much composure in this moment where he's like, sign it.
Yeah, he brings the paper.
Going to give Quint the $10,000. He's like, well, I don't know. And even the fact that the mayor still is like, I don't know. He's like stroking his face. Yeah. He's like, what do we do? Blah blah blah. He's like, sign it.
Yeah, he's
sign
not
the paper.
Asking. Brody is.
Well, he's
telling
also
him.
He's still being a weasel because he says my kids were on that beach too. You know,
trying to.
Yeah, I'm a victim
like,
too. I'm a victim of yourself.
Yes, that's exactly. That's a great point, man.
What better commentary is there on politics today than it's not real until it affects me. I'm going to sign all these anti whatever bills. You fill in the blank. It doesn't matter. But then, all of a sudden, when it affects my kids or whatever it is, or my family. Oh yeah, I support this now. When
it's a different story.
Voted
altogether.
Against it 20 times. It's such a. This is 1975. Even when it was released, maybe this was 2 years earlier when it was written or whatever. And it still holds true today. Of the it doesn't seem real until it affects me. And that's scary.
That was the one thing I wanted to say. You know that the screenwriter's in this movie.
No, where?
He plays the guy that runs the paper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the screenwriter.
Now, you mean the Gottlieb, same guy
I think is his
did
name?
The book?
No. The screenwriter for Jaws, for the movie.
Well, he
the
wrote
author
the
of the book
too.
Is in the movie, too.
Oh. No, I think that's
Peter Benchley wrote the book and the screenplay, co-wrote the screenplay. And
okay, so it's the co-writer.
Okay.
Gottlieb is like the guy who runs the paper.
Who is Benchley in the movie, Matt?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I know he's in it, but
he's
I
in
can't
there somewhere.
Remember
okay.
Yeah. So they go to Quint, and this reintroduction of Quint.
Yeah,
I think is just fantastic.
That is haunted shark museum. with the bones everywhere. So the way it's filmed in and out of the mouths of these shark
so
skulls,
great. And he's pulling like the shark teeth like out of
the jaws, out
boiling
of
them,
boiling water.
Right.
Which by the way, in real life would melt because most shark bones are made of cartilage.
Oh, that's funny.
Boil it, it would just make a mess out of it.
Okay, interesting. Now, I noticed he has some huge jaws hanging up where
he does.
I was like, whoa, he's got some really big ones. I guess maybe this is the 15-footer he talks about, maybe?
Oh, it could be, yeah.
Because
it was bigger.
It was huge, and I know that Bruce is ginormous, but I was just impressed with the jaw size of the one you see at the entrance or wherever, you know, the big one they shoot through. It's like, wow, okay, this is the guy.
It's a big one. So he agrees to do it, and he kind of agrees to let Hooper and Brody go with him. He doesn't really want them to go, but
he doesn't have a choice.
He realizes that the only way to get this money is to let them go with him.
This is Brody's mission or whatever.
I'm going to end this now. I do like the where he kind of calls Quint a city boy. And he's like, I don't need this blue collar working bullshit from this guy. When you get the three of them together, and they're all on the same page, right? And they're not antagonizing each other, and they're just with each other. I think it's
like when they're singing that song, and they finally get on the
same
page.
But like even when they're on like on the boat, and they're Quint is yelling at Hooper to do things on the boat, and Quint or Hooper is not being his normal snark, but he's like he is with he's with Quint, and he's doing everything.
Well, it's really fun.
I think
team
once they
get
to the boat, it's so good.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's great on the boat, but they're also at odds. Each one is not doing something right. So
right, yeah.
Brody has no idea what he's doing at all. Can't sail. He's scared of water, and he's telling him to do stuff, and he's not doing it right. Then Hooper wants to do his science stuff, and Quint's like, what are you? I told you, steer the boat, do this, do that. And he's trying to do all his scientific stuff. And so they're all kind of at odds and not doing something right. But it does eventually click. And then you get to the part where Quint tells the story. And then
it's so good.
They all start singing. And you're like, okay, these guys are a team now.
There's a bunch of mini parts in this on this boat that I think are fantastic. The first one is, why don't you come down here and chum some of this and he's throwing it over and then Jaws pops up out of the water.
It's a great scene.
And I use that as a gif a lot.
Yeah.
Is him just like standing straight up, like, wait, what? Walks backwards into the cabin. Yeah. And this is
one of the most iconic lines of all time. Movie history, yeah.
There's another scene where Quint is sitting, they're sitting down and Hooper, Brody's trying to learn how to tie a knot, and Quint sees the fishing reel click, and he looks at it like it's so slick. He looks at it side eye, and it does it again. He just keeps looking at it.
Oh, the silent unspoken when Quint.
Yes, and he puts the shoulder harnesses on, and he picks up the fishing reel and puts it into the little holder.
And Hooper's like, "I got it," or whatever. Meanwhile, Quint's like, "Yeah, I'm hooking this shark here."
And you can see him like slowly starting to hook things together. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Sheriff, move, move." And he has to he has Brody like put water on the reel so it doesn't burn and snap.
Don't drown me over here.
It's so many good lines.
And the interactions between them. I love that where he's just like, all right, get behind me. He's telling him what to do. He's trying to direct him. And I love the unspokenness, but then I also love the teamwork here. And it's such a tense moment because you're like, oh my God, does he have it? And they're doubting him.
Right. He has it.
But they're doubting Quint. And they're like, that can't be a shark. And it goes under the boat. And you're like, oh man, does he really have it? And then eventually when the line snaps, he's like, you think a small shark just got through this line here?
Yeah, right. So they figure out that like, if we shoot him with these barrels, he can't go underwater. Like the barrels are too heavy. He'll be fine. Well, again, because they can't show the shark, this is a brilliant way to show you where the shark is.
And a brilliant way to show you how big and strong this, what he theorizes is a few tons, 25 foot long shark can do. He's dragging one, two, eventually three barrels underwater.
Three barrels underwater.
And they didn't think one would be possible to, or how long you would go under. It wouldn't be long.
So their only option at this point, they feel, is to put Hooper in a shark cage. And I do love that Brody's like, he's going to destroy. What are you talking about?
Well,
this is a terrible idea.
Well, we should say Jaws has destroyed the ship at this point. I mean, if we're jumping ahead, the ship is almost hit. The engine is blown out. They can't even move anywhere. They're out of options. Yeah.
It was the salt water got in the engine.
Okay.
It blew up all the smoke.
We're
kind
of jumping way ahead.
Yeah.
On this. I did want to mention one thing. You said so many great scenes on the boat. One I really like is the Quint and Hooper comparing
scars.
Battle wounds. Yeah.
But there's a great scene where Brody lifts up his shirt and looks at an appendix scar on his side and kind of changes his mind, kind of puts his shirt back
down.
I was wondering. He wants to join in, but he knows that an appendix scar isn't really a great
story. What if it's not an appendix scar? What if it's a gunshot wound?
Oh, maybe. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
And he doesn't want to have that conversation. That's why he's an Amity.
Oh, you know, I never thought about that. That's pretty good.
I don't know. I'm totally like I'm totally guessing. But like the theory that I've heard is that he took a gunshot wound, and that's why he left New York was to get out of police work and take an easier life in Amity.
Those are both good reads. I like that. Yeah. I wasn't sure because I noticed that moment where he lifted it and didn't say anything like you wanted to join, and I couldn't think of it. And I like both those explanations.
I like it.
That's a great moment, though, because that's when they finally bond. Quentin Hooper at odds the entire time until they're sharing injuries. And then Quint's laughing and joking and I'll drink to my leg, you'll drink to mine, you drink to yours. Yeah, that's the first time you see them actually getting along and they're starting to become friends and get on the same page. It's a nice moment.
Yeah, it is.
And then what else, Matt? What else before we get to the other stuff on the
boat? Oh, another thing on the boat, and this is just a great shot, is every time they've got to go to the front, you know, they've got to shimmy along the side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He'll show one of the shoes slipping. You know,
me,
it's great because it's like, wow, you know, you could fall right off the edge of that boat any moment.
Yeah, the tension, especially when it comes to Brody, who's scared of water. Yeah. You keep thinking, oh, my God, is he going to slip?
Nope.
Chekhov's shoes.
That's right. So Hooper has, I don't know what it is. Basically, I guess poison. I guess that's what it is. And he cannot get it. He's got this needle, but he can't get it through the hide of the shark. So what he has to do is, his theory is like, I can get it into the, if I can get to the inside of his mouth, I can get it in there. Right. And the only way they could do that is to put him into the shark cage.
And at this point, again, they're out of options because I'm fairly positive. Matt, tell me if this isn't correct, but I'm pretty sure this is when Quint is running the boat at full steam and the engine's all blown out.
And they even tell him not to do it, and he's blowing them off. And then,
They're trying to get him to drown himself is what they're trying to do. They're trying to
get him into shallow water. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And Quint is Ahab. He's he's transfixed on... You know, this is his white whale, and he's trying to get it. He's blinded by the hunt and trying to get this shark. And so, yeah, he's full steam ahead, and clearly it's going to blow out the engines. It eventually does. So now they're kind of just floating there, and he doesn't apologize. He doesn't say it, but you just see the look on Quint's face, and he's like, so yeah, tell me about this cage. You really think this stuff will work? And it's like,
tell me how this science stuff works.
He can't admit defeat, but he's like, he finally gives in to Hooper. Okay, tell me.
He's dressed, right? Like, he's got his jacket on. He's got his hat on. He looks like a sober version of Quint, where he's like, oh, okay.
And at this point, doesn't he give the other guys life jackets?
No, that's when the boat was sinking.
Okay.
Oh, but maybe that wasn't that point. I can't remember.
Because the boat's almost, I mean, it's waterlogged, it can't move, and I think he's at this point, he's like, here's the life jacket. I like that. It's all those subtle body language actions that are Quint admitting defeat because he's in control. He thinks he's the best of the best. He's going to get this shark, no problems, no worries, and then he tries everything, and then finally, once his hubris gets the best of him, you see him just start acquiescing a little bit, starts handing out the life jackets, asking Hooper.
And then, of course, he doesn't keep one for himself because he made the line. He said the line early, he'd never put on a life jacket again.
Exactly. Mike, he hands them out and doesn't put one on, which is a nice visual callback.
So they put Hooper into the shark cage, which is just bonkers. There's no way. There's no way I would go into that water in a cage. There's no way.
I've seen videos where that does not work out. It's very scary.
It's very scary where
the sharks can crash and bite those things apart. There's one that's terrifying, a real life video. This is probably years back now, but of course you can find it somewhere where the person narrowly escapes, like the cage is destroyed. You see a camera underwater and they're in there, and they like somehow the shark takes the cage and they narrowly escape it, and you're just like terrified for them, and the people on the boat are like, oh my God, it's gone. And like, they think the guy is dead. And then I searched for shark attack on Google last night when I was doing some show prep, and apparently I didn't even watch it, but apparently it was like 3 days old, there was some crazy video of a shark getting the cage. So I don't know, it happens again. The point is, that cage is not going to protect you from these huge sharks.
Maybe from like a smaller shark.
Yeah,
maybe
sharks,
but not this sumbitch.
Yeah,
You know?
By the way, speaking of scale, if I have one complaint in this movie, which I consider to be perfect, is during the scene where he's in the cage, the scale of the shark seems to change.
It does.
They use actual footage of a shark at one point.
Yeah.
And it doesn't match the thing. And then when it gets caught on the top of the cage, it's, you know, before you could see it's almost the length of the entire boat. You know, and then when it's on top of the cage, it seems a little bit smaller, but that minor quibble.
I agree. When you see this is kind of our first good look at Bruce and how big it is when Hooper's in this cage and he sees it coming and it attack, you know, Bruce attacks the cage and it's this massive and it's tearing it apart. And it looks like a monster, right? Like it looks like a monster shark. And then to your point, Matt, they use real footage of a shark getting stuck in the cage. And it's very effective. It gives you an idea of, like, it looks like Bruce is tearing the cage apart, but it is significantly smaller when, you know, because it is, like I said, it's real footage of a shark getting stuck in that cage.
Yeah,
it's thrashing and spinning and trying to get out, but it is significantly smaller.
I do appreciate the real footage. And I know at the end of the movie, it looks like a married couple is the one that got the footage. It was, you know, two people with the same last name. They said shark photography or underwater photography by so-and-so. I couldn't find the name again real quick. But I appreciate them working that in because I do think that helped with the realism that you weren't always seeing a mechanical shark. So even if the scale was a little off, I think in the moment, and it's so terrifying, and the way that they cut it was still really effective. So I get that it doesn't ruin the experience or anything. I was looking up the world's largest recorded great white shark was 20 feet. So being 25 feet, that's actually pretty close to realistic. It's not like 25 feet is so far outside the realm of being a ridiculous monster. Like there was a 20-foot one they found, 20 feet in length and can weigh up to 5,000 pounds. And Quint says he's got... Quinn says he's got 3 tons on him, which is 6,000 pounds. So, like, that wasn't even far off from...
That's a big old shark, man. Huge. That's terrifying. That's terrifying.
And then, that's not even the biggest shark. The biggest shark is the Megalodon, which is what the Meg is based on.
That's not real, though.
Yes.
It's still alive.
Times, not now.
Yeah.
But it's real.
Okay.
It was a real thing. Estimates suggest it grew to be between 15 and 18 meters... 3 feet in a meter, and we just said 20 was the biggest great white shark. 3 times the size of what Jaws is supposed to be was a real prehistoric shark.
Nope.
I mean, that's like a literal whale, like whale-sized.
You know, we talk
shark.
About like human beings are like the top of the food chain. No, we're not.
What? Oh, you know, I mean, that's
not even close.
That's the interesting discussion, and I think we touched upon it in our review of Nope last week, is it's like, what gives humans the rights to say they lay claim to this land and this water? If you put a human with a cheetah, with a tiger, with a lion, with a shark, we're smarter. We're able to hide from these things, to protect ourselves, build cages, right? So we're smarter. But when it comes to just power and
no prep time.
If you just put not wits against each other, but just the physical, I mean, no way.
No. Yeah. Well, what was the DiCaprio movie? With the bear?
The Revenant.
Revenant. There's a prime example. Buddy.
Bears or another one. You're right. I mean, yeah, it's luckily we've got the brain power to you know, be 7 to 8 billion strong on Earth and be able to survive well enough against these things. Because, yeah, if it came to nature, no way.
Nope. This is the scene I always forget as to how the shark gets onto the boat.
Well, is it just sinking?
It's already sinking, and it just kind of leaps up onto the back and then makes the boat tilt.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And
of course,
him 3 times at this point with 3 barrels.
And even you can see Hooper is like stabbing him when he's in the cage. Like,
Brody's shooting him from
Brody
above.
There's nothing that is working.
And the thing is just huge. He's a machine. That's why the Terminator.
Literally.
Terminator is basically Jaws. He's just this unstoppable killing machine.
That's right. So unfortunately, this is where we lose Quint in what is just like one of the most.
It's slow.
Like, oh, come
it's a
on.
Slow.
It's slow,
death.
Right? Quint is sliding down the boat. Jaws is on the boat, and Quint is like using his feet to like try to kick him off, and he misses once, and that's all it takes. And his foot goes into Jaws's mouth and chomps down.
So swallows him up to his midsection, and then
chomps down even more.
And the blood coming out of his mouth when he chops his midsection.
The sound effect of like the crunch.
This is where I can't believe it's not R. This part where they did leave in.
The fact that this was the guy in the boat, they're like, no, take that part out. But you can leave this part of Quint getting chewed up in. That's fine.
Which is obvious.
Quint does get a couple good licks in. Yeah. This is where he grabs the machete that he had left on the side of the boat earlier. And he's kind of stabbing at Bruce a little. And then, for whatever good that did.
Chekhov's machete. Yeah.
That's right.
Should have got him in the eye. That probably would have.
That's what I'm saying. Go for them eyeballs.
Yep.
So
that just reminds me of that good scene when he's talking about all you see is his beady little eyes and
like a doll's eye.
You know what it reminded me of? Such Halloween.
What's that? Oh yeah.
That the whole
the speech about
Loomis gives a speech about, I didn't see he didn't have a child's eyes, he had the devil's eyes. So Brody is now on his own. And we know, of course, talk about Chekhov's air tank.
Well, that's good. That's a smart setup. When he's just got these air tanks for diving, and he says, "Oh, be careful, they'll explode," and that gives Brody the idea later on. So it's a really smart setup. That's what we talk about in Nope, which I won't spoil it, but there's things set up very smartly in Nope.
Yeah,
that's a good screenplay when you're not winking at the camera, but you're introducing things organically, and they just pay off.
There's a reason Nope and Jaws are in the same conversation.
Well, there's a lot of people saying, it's like Jaws.
Right.
So this point, too, we have to remember that Hooper, they think he's dead because they didn't see him come up from the shark cage, but Hooper's kind of hiding behind a reef somewhere.
Smart.
Get yourself
in a spot where that giant shark can't get in.
The boat is sinking. Only the crow's nest is basically above water.
Which is just a brilliant shot.
Quint has now been killed.
Is gone. I do like that when we see Bruce's teeth, like he's got like flesh and like muck like on his teeth still.
Yeah.
So Brody is laying down. He's got this bare bones rifle and he knows that this tank is inside the mouth of Bruce.
Yeah, he throws it in
waiting.
There.
He's waiting for to get the shot. And I do think it's crazy. I'm like, stop wasting your bullets. Like, what are you shooting at? You're not even trying to hit anything.
And he's only got so many chances because the boat's about to sink. So he's going to be in water. So he's trying as much as he can. But I love that they give him the kill line.
Smile, you son of a... And of course,
they give him a different one in two.
Oh, really?
They do. Yeah. And it's almost And it's almost the exact same setup.
Yeah.
It's crazy that two. The only thing that's different about two is Roy Scheider is much more tan.
Oh, okay.
And he is like Hulk Hogan tan.
Oh,
it's crazy. It's crazy how tan he is.
Well, he got a vacation as part of his package for the movie.
That's right. Bruce blows up in,
it's great. Shark guts everywhere.
Spectacular fashion. And the movie kind of ends with Brody. Hooper pops back up and he sees Brody kind of on the crow's, it's not a crow's nest, but it's like the
that's what it is.
It is, yeah.
The thing
is that what it is?
That's what he's on, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was thinking it was where Quint was like shooting the arrow or the...
No, uh-uh. Okay, you mean on the bow? Okay.
No.
Yeah. You're right.
He was in the crow's nest.
That's the only thing left that he was...
It was the tallest point of the ship, so...
That's fair.
But less is more. I love the unspoken... Just the visuals, the nodding, and then Quint, no. That's all they say. And it's just this moment where
it's very simple.
They're in disbelief. They're all in shock of what happened. They all almost just died. Of course, Quint did, but those two were almost goners. And I thought it was just a very believable moment. But the reunion is very nice where Brody does not believe that Hooper made it. And what a cool relief and reveal for him. Like, oh my God, someone else actually made it through this.
Yeah. And I love that they have to like take two of the buoys, tie them to like a piece of the ship, and I wish I could remember the line where he's just like, just keep kicking.
Yeah, so like the tide will bring them in, or
yeah.
No, day is it? And he goes, it's Wednesday, and I think the tide is with us.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, and he's like, just keep kicking.
And then the movie just ends. I can't believe how they don't wrap. I mean, nothing is bad, but it's an interesting choice because usually they tag a little extra something, happy moment, the characters survive, but just them being alive is your moment because after that credits roll and you just barely see two people in the ocean going back.
Right. And you don't know how far away
when the credits roll, you see it looking down on the beach and you could see them. It's real tiny.
Right.
With them arriving on the beach.
That's what I mean. You just barely see two people coming in to land. But I wondered if maybe they didn't shoot that and it's just two people
stock footage
coming in. Yeah. And that's why they couldn't get as close. That may have been an additional, just a guess. I don't know. Maybe it was a choice just to have them. But you know what I mean? It was so far away. It made me think, I wonder if that's them. But
so before we get out of here, do you know what the budget was on this?
Do I know what the budget was on this? No, I don't believe so.
$9 million. Do you know how much the box office was?
I do, because I just looked it up. 200 and something?
Oh, I've got it listed here on Wikipedia at 472.
Well, that's
they're
all
they're counting
releases.
The times that they brought it
the
back.
Re-releases. It I'll made, count yeah. it. That to me, that counts.
Right.
$472 million.
But you got a $260 million is what this thing made on
initially?
Its original release. So
that's crazy.
In $1975. So
it's the fact that this movie cost $9 million with a troubled production.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's incredible, and that's obviously one of the reasons why Spielberg became the guy. Obviously, he showed his talent, but he was the guy after this. And adjusted for inflation, this movie sits at number 7 all-time adjusted for inflation. This would be today, I think with all the releases, though, but this would be $1.172 billion.
That's crazy. Ooh.
So, yeah.
I agree with Matt. I think this is one of the greatest films of all time. This is easily top 5 for me.
Yeah, me too.
It's excellent.
I love this movie so much. It's so good. And this is the beginning of the summer blockbuster. This is the movie that kicks off the summer blockbuster craze that I don't even think is really a thing anymore. I feel like blockbusters come out all the time.
No, it is.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, the past couple years have been weird, you know, because of COVID. But
sure,
they still have the biggest movies. Well, they've been extending it, though, right? It used to be between May and August, and now they keep backing it up to, maybe it is.
I mean, when you have a Marvel movie coming out in February,
I get what you're both saying. I believe it's true. The biggest movies, a lot of them still do come out in summer, but they can release movies in February and March and make as much as some of the biggest blockbusters. So it's getting the lines blurring a bit. They exist, but also it seems like you can release a summer blockbuster any time of the year now. So it's not just relegated where it used to be like, oh my God, biggest movie.
It is.
You're right. That's what it is. All movies, any event movie that comes out any time of the year is what a blockbuster was just during the summer, right? So it's your superhero movies. Whenever they come out is when you're going to get a blockbuster. Now a Mission Impossible movie is like that. Top Gun was like that. Anything that lives in that world.
In the 90s, it was always a Disney movie.
Yeah.
That was the big Disney movie came out in the summer.
Or you had a Cameron movie, right? Like there was a James Cameron movie came out, that was like an event.
Every 12 years when they come out, I mean, there was Titanic, and then there 20 years
later,
there's
Avatar.
Well, I mean,
go back even further than that, you go Terminator 2.
Yeah, but I don't think those movies at that point in time were, I'm not saying they weren't big at all, those were summer blockbusters, but
Titanic is another level.
And Avatar became what a Marvel movie is. Now every movie, Marvel movie is an Avatar.
Correct.
That's just, every Jurassic World came out and beat that, like, you know, any big movie that's a blockbuster has the power to be what those were. But at the time, obviously, that was insane for Titanic in 97 to come out. And that is above Jaws. That is,
four or five?
I think I moved off it. It is number 5. So Titanic adjusted just barely, but because it came out 20 years later with inflation and everything, but 1.29, so almost 1.3 billion. The Sound of Music, 1.303,
that's
barely
so
edging
crazy.
That out.
It's still up there.
I know, but Star Wars, 77, 1.629 billion. And I think we all know what number 1 is. You know what it is?
That show
that toured around in 1930 for a nickel a showing for 10 years it toured. Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Gone with the Wind. It was like it would just tour around, and showtimes were so cheap, but it toured around for years, and it was so long ago that, adjusted for inflation, $1.85 billion.
That's hilarious. That's
nothing
pretty good.
Star Wars for inflation is close, but nowadays it's
nothing's
like...
That's
so high up there. I mean, they're getting there, though. I think worldwide, I believe these are domestic listings, but worldwide didn't Avatar get close to one.
Avatar got close, yeah.
9 or something, yeah. So
no, we get look forward to more of those.
Yeah. So it's a great movie. I see why you guys love it. Again, I really like it too. I think I just don't have the nostalgia of it's really good and I watched this so much as a kid. It's such a great movie, but can definitely recognize all the technical, the screenplay, the score, amazing. The cinematography, the horror and the performances.
It's a 4th of July tradition.
I was just going to say that it's every 4th of July, yeah. I have to watch it, yep. No matter what.
We do A New Hope and Jaws.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the two for the 4th of July.
Perfect. But yeah, it's great.
See, I do Jaws and Independence Day. Those are the two I do for 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. Independence Day is fine, but it's no Jaws or Star Wars.
No, it's definitely not.
So, all right, so we're going to wrap it up. Once again, let's go around the table. People can tell them where to find each other.
This is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter as well at Joey Butts, BUTTS21. Matt, where can the kids find you?
You can find me on Instagram at MattReedy219.
Do you have any Jaws artwork?
Oh, I got tons.
Yes, I thought so.
Oh, yeah. I got one. It's like a continuing series where I've done one. I started it with drawing Bruce, but wearing the mayor's
jacket. Oh, my God. It's
and
so
I've,
good.
I've been slowly but surely going through all the characters in the movie.
That's fantastic.
That's amazing.
If you guys haven't seen it yet, I mean, Matt's been on several times, and he's a great guest, but he's such a great artist. You really have to check out his stuff on Instagram. And
oh, thank you.
Oh, really? Yeah, I love your work. He designed the League of Show Shares chicken logo, so definitely check out his stuff, and you will not be upset. He's got all the nerdy pop culture stuff that he does his artwork, and yeah. And your brother is a great artist, too. He does shirts that end up in Hot Topic all the time.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. He's got his own line in Hot Topic, yeah.
Something in the Reedy blood with artistry.
One of the things I didn't mention at the top is our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers. Go there. You can, for $5 a month, you can get all kinds of extra content. Kevin, Matt Basler, and I are actually currently going through the Evil Dead series. So Evil Dead 1 and Evil Dead 2 might be up. Evil Dead 1 for sure is up. $5 a month. There's all kinds of good stuff over on that Patreon.
Yeah, I joined just because I wanted to listen to the Batman animated series ones that you guys did.
Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Those are old.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yeah. There's fun stuff on there and more coming. I'll just give a little sneak preview here. We haven't decided on this yet, but I was thinking maybe some of the old Review STL podcasts might end up on the Patreon.
Oh, man.
Review STL kind of predates Real Spoilers, and we did a bunch of series on there that we used to record before we would do Real Spoilers.
Yeah.
And so we have
baseball
movies. And we would do like certain types of movies and talk about our favorite ones. And so there may be some.
You, me, Blake,
Steve Kelly,
Matt, and Steve?
Blake and Matt. Yeah, Matt
and
Black.
Matt. Okay.
It was a different
Matty Blackie.
Yeah, exactly. Before Dan and Tom would roll in to record, we did it with a different crew of a couple of us. And so anyway, those might make, because I just rediscovered them on old hard drives because they're 10 years old now. Yeah. So you might get some extra. There's going to be a lot of stuff that we'll try to drop on there when we can, and then all the new stuff. So
indeed. So there you go. Bye. That's on Patreon.
Spoiler for us? Yeah, this is a Patreon.
No,
come on, give us a spoiler.
Oh my gosh. I wasn't prepared. See, this is what happens when Tom isn't here.
Spoil Jaws 4.
Michael Caine lives at the end. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.